This is the Blue Dot Report, a special edition look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom. When NASA officials recently announced that Voyager 1 had left the heliosphere and made it to interstellar space, it was front page news. But what exactly is the heliosphere, and why is it important to us here on Earth? What do we hope to learn about space beyond the heliosphere from spacecraft like Voyager and the IBEX, Interstellar Boundary Explorer, here in Earth orbit? Our guest today is an expert on these questions. Dr. David J. McComas is the Assistant Vice President of the Space Science and Engineering Division at Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. He's on the NASA Advisory Council and chairs the NAC's Science Committee. Dr. McComas is the principal investigator of NASA's Interstellar Boundary Explorer, IBEX, and two wide-angle imaging neutral atom spectrometers, TWINS missions. He's the principal investigator for space science instruments on numerous other NASA missions, including an instrument suite on the Solar Probe Plus mission scheduled to launch in 2018. McComas is a fellow of the American Geophysical Union, the American Physical Society, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He holds six patents, is the author of more than 450 refereed scientific papers that have been cited over 17,000 times, spanning a range of research topics including solar physics, cometary, planetary, and interstellar science, as well as numerous spaceflight instruments and techniques. And he's agreed to join us today. Dave, welcome.
Well, thanks, Dave. I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Let's start with the heliosphere. Explain to our listeners what it is.
Sure. Well, the heliosphere is just the region of influence of our sun. If you look at the word itself, helios is the Greek word for sun, and sphere is the region of something, the realm of it. And so heliosphere is nothing more than the realm of the sun. It includes all of the planets, and it's formed by a solar wind, material coming out from the sun about 1,000,000 miles an hour in all directions in space from the sun all the time, and it sort of inflates a bubble in the local interstellar material, and that bubble is what we call our heliosphere.
We'll get to Voyager in a moment, but I want to start out with your spacecraft, IBEX. Explain to our listeners how it works and where it is.
Sure. IBEX is a very small satellite. It's about 3 feet in diameter, 1.5 feet tall, and weighs a couple hundred pounds. It's in Earth orbit, although it goes almost out to the distance of the moon, about 50 Earth radii at its farthest point. The moon's at 65 Earth radii. And so it's in this highly elliptical orbit, and when it's further away from the Earth, where it spends most of its time, it's able to look out and observe individual particles that are coming in from the interaction region at the edge of the heliosphere. And we don't see light, so it's not a telescope in the classic sense, but instead there are neutral particles, single neutral atoms of hydrogen, which get produced out there through a process called charge exchange. And when they become neutral, they go zipping in whatever direction they were going at the instant they were charge exchanged. A tiny fraction of those come back in towards the sun, towards the Earth, and get captured by the instruments on the IBEX spacecraft. And it's a very low signal. We only see about 1 every 2 seconds, but over time we're able to build up an image of this interaction in all directions around us.
And the interactions are taking place on the edge of the heliosphere?
Yeah, about 1,000,000 miles away, in the region where our solar wind, the 1,000,000 mile an hour solar wind that's flowing out, basically stops inflating the bubble, and the pressure from the material outside in the local interstellar medium balances the pressure from the solar wind.
Now, the boundary between the heliosphere and interstellar space, that's the heliopause, right?
That's right.
And Voyager 1, we now have heard from NASA, crossed that boundary a year ago in August 25th, 2012, I believe. And they just announced it based on their findings, and it took a while to get the data back. Would you tell us a little bit about what the significance of Voyager leaving the heliosphere is?
Well, from a global human perspective, to have the first object made by humans leave the realm of our sun and solar system and travel out into interstellar space, the rest of the galaxy beyond, is, you know, one of those steps for humanity that it's hard to, you know, sort of hard to compare to. You know, the discovery of fire, or I don't know what, you know, the first space flight, the first time we went into space. So this is the first time we've ever sent something, anything, out beyond the realm of our own solar system. And so it's hard to overstate its significance in some really long-term global perspective. As a scientist who studies this stuff, it's also fascinating because we really start to be able to measure the distributions of particles which aren't from the sun itself, but are from the interstellar material beyond, and understand what the densities are and the magnetic field strengths and things like that. And so there's a lot of new information that we couldn't get remotely that we are able to get with Voyager passing the boundary.
I first really started to get interested in the heliosphere about 10 years ago, and it was a pretty quiet field, as you pointed out to me in a conversation we had earlier, because Voyager was getting farther and farther out there. And then each year we would hear stories about, oh, it's entered a new region, it's nearing the boundary, and then, you know, the anticipation would build. I think NPR did about 7 separate stories over the years saying Voyager's about to cross into interstellar space, and then, of course, this year it finally... They confirmed that it did. What have we learned about what we thought the outer heliosphere was like compared to what Voyager has discovered and what IBEX has discovered, what it's really like out there? What do we know now that we didn't know 10 years ago?
Yeah, I would say that our view of the heliosphere and its interaction with the interstellar medium of a decade ago was so wrong that if you took somebody who had the understanding of that, a scientist who had, you know, our understanding 10 years ago, and you plop them into a big international meeting where we're discussing this stuff today, they wouldn't understand much of the conversation. It's that different. And much more complicated and much more nuanced than any of us had any idea a decade ago. Part of the reason that NPR's done and others have done so many stories on Voyager's about to cross this or it saw that or whatever is because it keeps getting to regions that weren't part of the map, weren't part of the plan, and it's a little bit like maybe sending ships across to the New World for the first time.
Here there be dragons.
Yeah, sure, and you're going to draw the map. You don't really know. Well, you're going to hit some islands first, you know, before you get to the mainland. And you know, is it going to be a swamp when you get there, or, you know, what's the situation? And so both through IBEX and Voyager, we've basically been teasing that information out, Voyager directly, although it only makes observations where it is. There are two Voyagers, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, that head out roughly towards the nose of the heliosphere, the direction that we're traveling through the interstellar medium. And part of what you get from IBEX is the complementary information of looking all directions in space and getting information from all directions. So it's a really dynamite combination between these two in situ local sets of measurements and the global understanding you get from IBEX.
Can you give our listeners a basic idea? What is this like out there leaving? Once we pass the outermost planets, past Neptune, past Pluto, once we get out there, what is the first boundary that Voyager crossed?
Sure. So the outermost planets are at about 30 astronomical units, or AU. That's the distance between the Earth and the Sun. It's about 8 light minutes. And so if you go out to Neptune and Pluto, they're at about 30 AU. The first boundary is out at 90 or 100 AU. And we call it the termination shock. So about 3 times further out than the furthest planets, you reach the termination shock. That's the place where this supersonic solar wind, this million-mile-an-hour solar wind, abruptly slows down and starts to be diverted. It can't flow at this supersonic speed forever. Eventually, if it's gonna come into pressure balance with the external pressure from the rest of the galaxy, it's got to get to a point where it's so thin, so tenuous, that basically it has to start bending away. And if it's supersonic, it has to do that through a shock, just like the air in front of a supersonic jet has to go through a shock, which you can hear as a sonic boom. So, too, the solar wind has to go through the shock before it can start being diverted away. So the Voyagers crossed the termination shock a number of years ago, first Voyager 1 and then Voyager 2, and then they were in this very interesting region of subsonic flow of the charged particles, where the directions start to get bent and there's a lot more turbulence and things like that. And then the outer boundary of that region is actually the heliopause. And so there are these two regions, two boundaries that you go through. Now, we used to think that there were actually three boundaries, that there'd be a bow shock out in front of the entire heliosphere, shocking the incoming material from the local interstellar medium. But through some other observations from IBEX, which I think we can discuss a little later, we've learned that there isn't even a bow shock in front. So basically, the termination shock at about 100 AU, and then the heliopause at something like 130.
Now, for our listeners wondering, why is the heliosphere of such interest? Why is it important to us here on Earth? What's the heliosphere do for our listeners?
The heliosphere protects us. If you were out where Voyager 1 is, you'd be exposed to a lot more galactic cosmic radiation, which isn't a problem for that spacecraft, but would be a problem for us. And would be a problem for astronauts if they were traveling out there. It turns out that about 90% of the galactic cosmic radiation is actually shielded out by these outer layers of our heliosphere, in particular in this region between the termination shock and the heliopause, where a lot of magnetic field gets sort of wound up. And it's very hard for the high-energy charged particles to come to work their way in through there. So, for example, at 100 million electron volts, which is a sort of a common and dangerous energy of galactic cosmic radiation, only about 10% of those make it through that region and into the inner heliosphere. If it weren't for that, the galactic cosmic radiation would be about 10 times higher in the inner part of the solar system. And, for example, even the thought of human exploration of Mars would probably be impossible with 10 times higher galactic cosmic radiation. So I think there are some important implications. There may have been variations in this over time that, you know, could have had other effects. But today, that's sort of the main effect.
That it protects us from that cosmic radiation.
Protects us from the vast majority of that galactic cosmic radiation.
Mm-hmm. What is the source of that?
Particles that are accelerated probably at shocks around supernovas and novas exploding stars that drive large shock waves out and accelerate particles to very, very high energies.
We're going to get into what things are like out there in our next segment. But before we do, I'd like to talk a little bit more about IBEX. And can you explain to our listeners briefly, what are these energetic neutral atoms that you study?
Sure. So charged particles are tied to magnetic fields. If you've ever taken some paper and a magnet and sprinkled iron filings on them, you can sort of see the magnetic field lines. They sort of look like circles. And when you have a charged particle, it gyrates. It circles around those magnetic field lines. And so the solar wind is filled with these charged particles gyrating around the magnetic field line that's being dragged out from the sun. They go through the bow shock together, and basically, you can't detect them unless you're out there. But there are some very low-energy neutral atoms coming in from the interstellar medium. In fact, about half of the interstellar material in the interstellar medium right around us is neutral. And there's a process called charge exchange, where an electron can hop from a neutral atom over to a charged ion, a proton, and basically neutralize that proton. This charge exchange is a very rare process, but it can happen, and enough of it happens that when you get that hopping of the electron over, you basically neutralize the particle. It's been gyrating around the field, but at the instant of charge exchange, it goes zipping off tangentially in whatever direction it was going, and some fraction of those, because they're gyrating around the field, happen to be going back towards the Earth and back towards us.
And those are the ones you image.
Those are the ones we observe.
We're going to need to go to break here in a moment, Dave, and we'll be back with our guest, Dave McComas, and talking about the outer heliosphere.